Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The big debate is, and is Kamala Harris making women look incompetent? We're going to ask Carrie Lucas, president of the Independent Women's Forum. I don't think Kamala is making women look competent at all, but I've had great women bosses, strong women bosses, women who broke the glass ceiling at the Chicago Tribune, women like Anne Marie Lipinski. And I don't think that there would be a time when Anne Marie would want to sit down for an interview with a man like her deputy holding her hand. I don't see that happening, ever. So we'll talk to Carrie Lucas about this. And of course, Jeff Carlin, my friend and co-host here, master of pies, lover of cats, executive producer at WGN Radio is here as always. And me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of your favorite website, johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of common sense. And where are you? As the future of the people of America is apparently in the balance, you're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
And as promised, Carrie Lucas, president of the conservative-leaning, nonprofit, Independent Women's Forum, is our guest today on the Chicago Way. Carrie is writing now for a variety of publications, including The Federalist, and I'm just going over a list of columns that she's written. Look, consider this. Kamala Harris's campaign is making women look incompetent. Inside Democrats' plan to indoctrinate your toddlers at preschool. I remember that one. Bill would end flexible work, every American into the same old 9-to-5, and many others. Carrie, welcome to the Chicago Way. It's been a long time coming. I'm so glad you're here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
As we begin, I tweeted out your latest column for the Federalist, Kamala Harris's campaign is making women look incompetent. And I remembered working for my mentor, a strong woman, Anne Marie Lipinski, who actually broke the real glass ceiling, becoming the first managing editor and the first publisher of the Chicago Tribune back in the day when it was the Tribune. And I wondered if Anne Marie would ever sit down and do an interview about her work and her life while holding the hand of an older man who will giving her comfort, like an older man to guide her through it. And she would not. If you would ask that thing, if you dared suggest that, you might have lost a hand in the process. And now I see Kamala Harris doing that interview, getting ready for the debate on Tuesday night. What do you think about this?
You know, it's exactly right. This should be something that is that's not partisan. You know, there's a lot of women. I think about some of the leading women on the left, Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton, these women would not, these were strong women. They were able to do interviews. They spoke for themselves. They were strong women. I didn't agree with them most of the time, but they, they were representing themselves and representing their beliefs and seemed very capable. And I think it just is such a contrast right now, watching what Kamala Harris is, how she's choosing to, I assume that this is really her campaign team that's told her she needs to, fear speaking to any reporter or doing anything off the cuff. But man, is it insulting. And it really makes, I think as particularly as a woman, it's kind of depressing. The idea that after long last, if we're going to have a female president, that it's going to be somebody who seems, so terrified and so controlled, so much like a puppet to somebody else. I feel like it seems like a shame. And I wish she would kind of step up and find her voice. And otherwise, I think American women should look at this and say, yeah, this isn't how this should go down. We shouldn't be, the first female president shouldn't be somebody who is, unable to speak for herself, which is really how the vice president is being showcased to the American public right now.
As somebody who myself too, I mean, one of my mentor in this business and in radio and media, it was Tracy Slutskin when I was at WLS, and one of these women who, unfortunately, because the way the world goes, was seen as maybe angry or mean or what have you, but she was really just a strong leader who could see through BS, who knew when people were trying to, play one over on her. And I learned a lot about that, a lot about standing your ground and about being full of conviction. And that just, it's just completely missing in Kamala Harris. And my father is a lifelong Big D Democrat and has, he's come to me and said, what does she say? She doesn't say anything. It's just randomness. And then, Donald Trump's been guilty of that at times, rambling and maybe not making, complete cogent sense in what he's doing, because he's his braggadocious personality, but it has been tempered a little. And I want to ask you, Carrie, how do you come to the IWF? I mean, what is your background and what does, drives you to try to be this conservative voice for women, in media and in politics?
Well, it's interesting. I was bit by the political bug when I was shortly after college and started working kind of for a libertarian, the Cato Institute. And it was interesting seeing how women a long time ago now, I've been with Independent Women's Forum for more than 20 years. But often I feel like back then, especially a couple decades ago, there was kind of a real bifurcation in how women were displayed in politics, or there were kind of two roles. You were either the far left feminist, or if you were a conservative, there was an assumption that you were going to be kind of focused on a family values and be and were going to be motivated by the pro-life issue. Independent Women's Forum doesn't take a position on abortion, and we really come at this from a I would say like center right position of trying to find, bringing up the trying to build awareness of how women benefit from limited government, economic liberty, and then like a healthy culture. It's not a, we're a secular organization, so we're not focused on kind of the religious aspects, but really on what the building blocks of a healthy culture are for women. And that doesn't mean, I feel like sometimes there's almost a presumption that as women, you need to either kind of be on the side of either the stay-at-home mom versus the working woman. And I feel like one thing that's been so wonderful in the last couple decades is to realize how all that's so outdated. And for most women I know, everybody recognizes that there's a total shades of gray when it comes to whether or not you're going to be a working woman or primarily a parent, that women are crafting lives and play those different roles throughout the course of their lives. And all of those have value. All of those should be respected. And we want a government that's going to, allow the most opportunity for women, and for women to craft the lives they want and to pursue their own vision of happiness and not try to, tilt things and, have this idea of this very limited idea of what women want.
And it's interesting because you kind of mentioned that there were that you know, there's a gray area in being a mother or a partner or a parent and then a working. And the gig economy has really kind of opened that world to make it much easier, lowered that threshold. And I've seen it, and I'm in my 40s. I've seen in the women who I grew up with as friends who are now, they had a career and then they pivoted to family and now they've pivoted back to a balance of that. And I see them almost working against themselves sometimes in the idea of, government and being pro this and pro that without realizing maybe, that if you're just handing control to someone else, then you're not really taking control of things. It may seem like it, but it's not. Do you see anything on the left that is kind of a crossroads for you where you could meet people and say, hey, you're kind of working against yourself. Is there anything there that you could positively maybe grow on if you're trying to draw people across the political divide?
Yeah, it's interesting. I do think that this whole idea of kind of the nature of work and how to create the kind of truly diverse opportunity economy that I think that pretty much everybody agrees we all want. I think that the idea, I feel like it's unfortunate that under the Biden-Harris administration, that they've pushed some labor regulations that I think are completely counterproductive. One thing that's pending right now is this is a rule related to independent contracting. And I know where this is the Chicago, we're talking about the Chicago way here, but this is the California way. And I think it provides a real, a warning sign for what might happen to the country. California, about 5 or 6 years ago now, passed a law that restricted how companies could engage with independent contractors. And it was done out of supposedly the progressive left said this was necessary to protect employees' interests, to make sure they had access to benefits and, fair treatment or whatever. And what we saw is that as basically independent contracting opportunities were tremendously restricted, or they were lost a lot of independent contracting. Millions of people found their employment opportunities pulled back, reduced, some were let go entirely. I remember it was kind of funny that you had some of the journalists who had been writing in favor of this all of a sudden found out that actually they were losing their own jobs because they were independent contractors and they could no longer be supported in California because of the risk of regulation. That kind of regulation and red tape hurts everybody, but especially women who are more likely than men to value flexibility and to want those non-traditional work relationships. So that's one that I feel like if we ever can kind of get cut past some of the rhetoric that a lot of folks on the left would see would be, we should be able to come together on some of those kind of labor issues.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm thinking that we do need eventually should have a woman, female president. I'm thinking more of a competent woman, like the late Jean Kirkpatrick, my brother's professor at Georgetown. She was a neocon, a hawk, but she was tough. I think of her a president like that, chain smoking, drinking whiskey, and writing dictatorships and double standards from the White House Oval Office. I can imagine that. I don't see that happening anytime soon because I don't think the politics is promoting. You are doing this, but not much of our politics is promoting that kind of woman to the front. Why is that? Why are conservative women constantly knocked down before they get going?
I think that I have a lot more hope than that. I think that you do have some really strong emerging female leaders on the conservative side. Somebody like, Nikki Haley was the last woman standing, the last person standing against President Trump in competition for to be this year's nominee. I think she has a bright future. In the Senate, you've got Marsha Blackburn, who I think is just a great voice. You've got more and more women out there who are standing up and I think are highly competent. I really think this is only a matter of time. It's I think this is a real shame And I don't think that this is a, you know, both sides have problems type of moment, because I do think that what we're seeing among the left, and really how the Democrats handled this last primary, is shocking and just undemocratic. And I guess it goes back a little further back, really back to 2020. When you've had a sense that there are people pulling the strings who are not really taking it, like who are not being shown to the American people. I think for a long time, if you look fairly for the last couple of years, it's been clear to you, pretty much anybody who's paying close attention, that President Biden was incapacitated, that he is not a decision maker, that when he was allowed to speak to the press, that he often misspoke or said things that he didn't mean to say out loud. I think this has really been a driving factor in what's happened during this administration. And you could see him, like handlers pulling him back and back and back. And yet when it came time for there to be a moment where you could say, okay, you know, let's move on from President Biden, or force President Biden to stand on his own two feet and have to show himself to be a capable leader and competent, and to reoffer himself to the American people, reapply for this job as everyone is supposed to do every 4 years. The Democrats, you did everything possible, including, you know, lawfare, to keep candidates like Robert Kennedy, but really almost any candidate off of the stage, to prevent them from having a real primary. And now you see that same, obviously that fell apart the second that Biden actually had to stand up and appear at a debate. And then the same handlers, the same guys behind the scenes, just basically, you know, tossed Biden and stuck in Kamala Harris. I don't think there's anybody who seriously thinks that Vice President Harris was the best that Democrats had to offer. And yet she was put in, and now she's not allowed. You know, we've had one incredibly controlled, really scripted, barely 16 minutes interview done with a bestie of the administration that was supervised by her vice presidential candidate. So this was still somebody, and it was cut and edited. It's to call it an interview is really generous. And yet that's all we've heard from her. Otherwise, it's been just the same campaign speech that somebody's sticking in a teleprompter, and she's able to just recite off of off of this teleprompter. So it's been a really weird moment, I think. And I hope that I really think this people should demand more. I mean, obviously we do have, thank heavens, this debate coming up. So we'll be able to, she is going to have to speak. She's going to have to explain or try to explain her positions on her own without the help of a teleprompter or a script, which is how she has been. But the American people shouldn't, you shouldn't accept this. So this is obviously, this woman is not speaking for herself, and we deserve better. And it's really not about party. This is not, we shouldn't reward this type of behavior when it's obvious that this candidate isn't even representing herself.
If you look at what you just said and about the Kamala Harris experience from the perspective of a foreign intel officer, you would be seeing the same, you would be saying basically the same thing, that this is a scripted person who is incapable or terrified of speaking on her own, and that the media is joined, the state media, or in our case, what do we call it, the Democratic media complex, will defend her. Any mention of her hair, the way she looks, any mention of that will result in a chorus of screams. And so they pass over her record as vice president. I don't think this helps the country. It doesn't help women in general. It doesn't help girls looking at another candidate for the highest office in the world. And they must be looking at this as, is that what I have to do? Do I have to have a man hold my hand in an interview? I mean, all this is rather, it's depressing if you're a feminist. I don't think I'm generally associated as being a feminist, but still, It's sad.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's interesting. I do think that I keep coming back in my head to this, to the Hillary Clinton comparison, because, you know, we don't have to think back that long. It was just two election cycles ago that you did have a woman. And it's, you know, again, Hillary Clinton is has very different policy views than I do. I don't share her perspective on healthcare and tax policy and a lot of things. But she was a woman who had some serious accomplishments of her own, and she was certainly willing and able to talk to an interviewer to, you know, really step to the table and represent her views. It's very different than what's happening now. When Kamala Harris is just so incredibly scripted and sheltered, that it has the feeling that there's somebody else behind her, and that shouldn't be how it is. We shouldn't wonder, as you know, it's funny that right now, as we have, very serious problems confronting the United States. I know that everybody's focused on November, but, 2 months is a long time for a country, and for a lot happens in 2 months. And we have, you know, major international events happening. We have, you know, problems with the economy, new information coming in about the labor data and jobs that we thought were created that weren't created. I don't think there's anyone who seriously thinks President Biden is making decisions at this point. I mean, it's very transparent that he is not. He's not engaged. He's been on vacation for more days than he hasn't in the last couple of months. We know he isn't making decisions on behalf of the country. So who is? It seems that the press might want to have more curiosity about how decisions are being made. Who's talking to foreign leaders? Like, really talking to them on behalf of the United States of America. You know, Kamala Harris is on the campaign trail, but you do have it seems like a headless horseman. Or if it's not a headless horseman, we don't know who it is. And that's a problem. And it seems as though there's a lot of people in the Biden administration who want this to continue and want, whoever is running the country right now to get to keep running it and just have Kamala Harris as kind of a front man. And that shouldn't be. I hope that we can see her come out and start defending herself or showing what it is that she stands for, because it shouldn't be this kind of depressing an election when one candidate is unwilling to talk to the American public.
If there's a world leader on the stature of Vladimir Putin who wants to talk to the leader of the United States, say there's an emergency, okay? Who would he call? I would think that they would patch in Barack Obama on the cell phone. That's my view. I mean, maybe it's a I'm sure that Democrats would call me conspiratorial, but I think he's been pulling the strings for a very long time. And I don't think that American interests are served when the president of the United States is non compos mentis. I just don't think that's a good thing for us. And here we are pretending that he's fine. And I wonder, in the pretending that he's fine and Kamala Harris can handle it, even though we know she can't, are we revealing the weakness that's going on in the American culture? I think that's what it is. We reveal how weak we are, how weak we've become, and how ripe we are for plucking either from Iran or China or Russia, that we're weak because we engage in fantasy like children who should know better. That's my view.
You know, John, it's interesting because I think that we're going to learn a lot in the next couple of months, because I have to say that I'm hopeful that actually Americans are that there's more of a demand that we're smarter consumers than the polls or the pollsters in the mainstream media would like us to believe. I felt like there was something so strange about the kind of splash hype. It was as if, you know, you had a new movie coming out, or Taylor Swift was launching a new album and tour, and this is tremendous social media campaign and splash around the new vice president who supposedly was, you know, an agent of change and was joyful, and all these, right, these things that were happening that are, you know, marketing techniques that that I feel like we try to educate our kids on, to say, you know, okay, that's like a silly thing that the Instagram is putting out and trying to sell you this brand of makeup by, you know, showing you these glossy pictures and you know, making it seem as though you too can be just as wonderful and you know, as cool as this right, person. That's how our Kamala Harris was being offered to the American public in the beginning. And I'm hopeful, though, and it was depressing to see how many people seem to be like, yay, and just, you know, falling for those same tricks that I warned my preteens about, that they might find as a YouTube influencer trying to sell them something. I'm hopeful, though, that I think that there are a lot of people, including some of the mainstream media, including some kind of old school Democrats and liberals, who know in their heart that this is wrong, and that it's just simply bad to have a candidate who is completely unwilling to speak to the press. They know in their heart that that is fundamentally undemocratic and you know, not something that a strong party or a strong country should allow. I think that people are starting to wonder, and we may see that a lot of folks are going to demand better, and that she's going to have to do better, or she's going to lose and lose badly.
I agree that she's going to lose badly if that continues. But you are more optimistic, kind of like Ronald Reagan, and I'm less optimistic for us. If we get to the debate for a second, the debate is coming up. How do you think, how do women deal with debates? Women like Kamala Harris, will she deal with this? Any criticism of her will be what? Characterized as, you're playing the sexist, you're lurking over me, you want to stand over me, you want to mansplain me. I mean, how will she do that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I have to say, I think that the strongest moments that Kamala Harris had during that interview with Dana Bash on CNN, I thought the best moments for her were when she was invited to kind of double down on her race and her gender as a reason to support her. And she, I think, wisely, you didn't go there. She didn't kind of linger on the on that and said, you know, I want to be the best president for everyone, and you should vote for me because, not because I'm a woman, but because I'll be the best president.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful. I thought that was a good moment. I was happy to see it because beyond the kind of the horse race of who's going to win this particular moment in November, I do think, you know, for the good of the country and for you know, the cause of women, I don't want to see you know, a woman be just totally pathetic in these situations.
Right.
So I think that she might be like smart enough and be coached, you know, not to go too far down that road. I think that President Trump has a you know, that there is a risk for him in this, I think based on his performance with President Biden, which had a similar risk, I think that President Trump was aware of how weak and how addled President Biden was likely to appear. And so I think he was really careful not to kind of punch too hard or to come off seeming mean or, you know, just not to seem like he was personally attacking him. And I think that President Trump did an excellent job during that debate, you know, holding him to account for his policies, but, you know, again, not seeming mean. And I do think that's important. I think that, you know, every situation has its strengths and kind of drawbacks. And one thing that being a female candidate, people there is more of a kind of a natural sympathy for women. And I think if a man is, you know, seen as being angry sounding, I think for good reason, people recoil from that. Yes. And so I think President Trump will have to avoid that. But Kamala Harris also has to look like she's in command, like that she's, you know, is a strong woman and isn't seeking to play that kind of the you know, woe is me. I, you know, feel sorry for me because I'm a woman, because that'll lose people, including women. I don't think women like when other women act like that.
Agreed. And I think that President Trump tried out the new voice that he will use on Kamala Harris. Look, listen to me. I'm talking like I'm a character from Dune, but he's using a voice that he'll used in the New York address, the World Economic Forum or the New York Economic Forum, where he spoke calmly, softly, clearly, and let her answer the questions. If he just comes off that way, I think he'll do well. But I agree with you that those of us who don't want her to be elected don't want a weak candidate. We don't want weak Democrats. We don't want weak Republicans. We don't want weak women. We want strong women. And the playing of, again, on the weakness doesn't do us any good as a nation, does it? It does not, I don't think.
I absolutely agree. I do think that the President Trump has seemed much more thoughtful and conscious of how he comes off to people in trying to make sure that, you know, obviously he's always had kind of a larger than life personality. And one of his strengths is his kind of, you know, I think often it's tongue in cheek, but braggadocious, larger than life vibe to him. But I think he's been able to kind of show some humility and is conscious of the need to show that he's a nice guy and empathizes with people. So I would think his advisors would be talking to him about the importance of doing that, particularly when facing her on Tuesday.
And it's interesting too, you know, the braggadociousness is kind of what brought Trump to the center stage and is really people, you know, tacked onto that. I feel that they saw that and they saw this person who didn't care what people were going to say. In fact, you know, looked for it and use it against them. Do you see anyone on the right, you know, women, obviously we're talking, you know, independent, the president of the Independent Women's Forum. But do you see anyone on the right who may, you know, be up and coming, who we should be hitching a star to or following or keeping our eyes on?
Gosh, you know, I don't know that I have anybody who's going to instantly come to mind as the kind of next big leader. There's so many great young conservatives and members of Congress out there who I really do think have that authentic voice. I mean, you know, I think of one thing that I think that why Trump caught so much kind of enthusiasm and kind of caught fire with so many people was because I do think there was this truly fresh outsider look of at Washington and this desire to say, we shouldn't just let the status quo continue. I feel like, you know, I've been working in the public policy world for decades now, and I feel like I can tell you the, all of the reasons why it's impossible to reform federal workforce laws. And I think there's something great about the idea of Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Robert F. Kennedy taking a look and saying, you know what, like, I don't care about those. You know, they are disruptors who know how to come in, change a business model, and make some real change. I think Americans are sick of the government, you know, just continuing to gobble up a growing share of our freedoms and certainly of our resources, and then coming out with the same kind of, B minus work at best. So I think that Trump, that's one of the reasons why Trump caught fire and has the potential. I think that there's a lot of conservatives out there who realize that that's what people want. We want, like, that people want, like, real actual change in Washington, not just the kind of the tinkering with the status quo, which is so much of what was offered before.
Gary, I'm a little concerned that at the end of the day, the entire future of our country and the world will focus or center on the performance of two candidates in the debate on what, Tuesday night? Is it Tuesday night? And I'm a little concerned that everything that we've been talking about, or so much that we've talked about, and so much that the American people have wanted to know and talk about, has been pushed to the side so that we can deal with showbiz and personalities. And I'm concerned. I don't know about you two, but Jeff and Carrie, but I'm concerned that that's where we've fallen, because that's not a way to run a country or an empire, I think.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, Trump did come to us as a celebrity first. I mean, that was kind of his key into, and it's not unlikely or outside the norm, really. But I think it's the differential. And I've seen this, John, in media. You know, there are no conservative, you know, celebrities really in media. I mean, there are among conservatives, there are, you know, quote unquote celebrities, but there aren't, you know, we don't have a Rush Limbaugh anymore. We don't have Clint Eastwood, right? There's the one, that's the other one I was thinking of. Some of these guys who is a conservative voice, but then they get the rug pulled out under them, like a John Voight type, who is, you know, all of a sudden, people like him don't want to talk to him. I don't know that, you know, it's going to be a while before you can build a stable of people like that who can influence people outside the political realm. I mean, that's just kind of my read on it, because I know it's happening in social media, but how can you trust anybody in social media these days? It's just such a weird cesspool of sometimes. But that's just my take on it.
You know, I guess I feel like I'm playing the role of the optimist here, but I actually think that one of the possible, when we look back at 2024 and realize, look back at what happened and, you know, how things shake out, I wonder if one of the big stories might be of how little the mainstream media, and by that I would even lump in kind of the, you know, all the cable networks and kind of that traditional, the big, what we think of as kind of like the big dogs, the Fox Newses and the CNN and MSNBC, where we think of what's being covered as what's most important, that might be a little more secondary. I think of a lot of people right now I've got five kids, and my oldest is 19. And I think about like where she gets her news. And you do have like a lot of these YouTubers and different personalities that are, you know, offering these long form videos. I think that President Trump has just done a really amazing job in getting to some of these, you know, long talks with people that run the gamut of everything from culture and personality stuff to pretty hard hitting policy and questions about the state of the world. And I think that there's this kind of big impression, and that there's a lot of voters, especially younger voters, that hear much more about that and are having their views shaped by those things as much as what happens on Fox News or on CNN.
I think you have a very good point, Carrie. And I think that's the future of media, if there is a future. It's not in the broken down old newspapers. It is in these long form broadcast podcasts. The future of Jeff Carlin can pull the curtain back on that. I think that's the future. Carrie Lucas, thanks for joining us on the Chicago Way podcast. I just want you to know that we respect and we really care about the Independence Women's Forum and you as you're a great writer. We love to read it. We're reading it now in the Federalist, pages of the Federalist, but also wherever you've written, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. It's just been a pleasure, and you're very thoughtful, and we love to read your stuff. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, definitely. And Carrie, where do you direct people to find you, track you down? What's your favorite place to lurk on the internet?
Sure. Yeah. Well, please come visit the Independent Women's Forum. That's IWF.org. And you can see all the work we're doing. You know, it's interesting that I feel like for the first time in a long time, I haven't ended up talking about the defending women's sports and women's spaces. And I do think that's one of an underlying issue in this election when we're talking about, it's funny, we talked so much, guys, about kind of What it means to be a female candidate and a male candidate. But one of the things that's underpinning this election and that will be decided is, do we believe that there are words like men and women and those of actual consequences moving forward? So please come visit us at IWF and you can see our work on that and a whole lot of other issues. And then I'm at on X at Carrie Lucas. So please come check me out there. And I really thank you guys. I really appreciate this getting to talk to you. This has been such a fun interview and I hope you'll have me back again sometime.
Well, we got to tackle the sports thing for sure.
We have to talk about your career as a boxer. Would you ever want to do that? Maybe in the next career? Jeff could be the trainer.
Here we go.
How about trainer? I'll be your punching bag. How about that? Thank you, Carrie.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Take care, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
For Carrie Lucas, president of the Independent Women's Forum. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio. And for me, John Cass, editor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And while you're sipping that last cup out of your Chicago Way mug that you can get on my website, John Cass News, remember this. Remember a man who was president. I revered him. He didn't like communists, and he stood up to them when everyone else was asking him to back down, and he refused. Ronald Reagan. And there is a movie that I hope all of you see. Reagan, the movie. Go see it before the election so you'll know what's at stake. Thanks for joining us on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.